Mike here. Quick note. If you enjoy listening to Elise and I break down episodes and films on this podcast, you should know we have an entirely separate podcast through Patreon. There we break down New York City-based rom-coms like When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, Hitch, Trainwreck, Bros, and many more to come.
I think that we should yell at children more often. Not parents. Parents, be nice to your kids, but the rest of us should sometimes take children out to task a little.
I never yelled at a child, but I did have an arch nemesis who was like 8 years old. Like, hearing you talk about it, I'm like, well, then why would they do all that for just that moment? But then you think about it, and if they didn't, it would look like the movies I made in high school with my friends. We're really, really concerned about the bottom line of Bros.
I really am. I feel like we've already found ways they could have saved money on the budget.
Right.
If they just would have asked us about it.
For $4 a month, you get 3 to 4 episodes monthly covering a rom-com, and we're doing some fun bonus content as well. You can find us on the Patreon app by searching We Couldn't Help But Wonder, or through our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. Hope you join us there. Hey, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
How's it going today?
Oh, it's going very well. Just a quick butthole down that's not directly related to And Just Like That, but related kind of to Sara Ramirez, is I saw the revival of Spamalot, which originally starred Sara Ramirez.
In their star-making role.
On Broadway. Yeah. It was great. It was a great revival, and it got great reviews, too. Highly recommend if you want a show to see.
I'm very excited. I very much want to go see it. It has quickly become a very hot ticket.
Really?
But I'm hoping... Oh, yeah. Like, moments ago, you could snag a ticket for not that much. And, like, literally, as of, like, yesterday, it's like, nope. So I'm hoping that somewhere in, like, the cold days of December or perhaps early January, it will be an easier ticket to get.
Also, butthole down in relation to a previously released episode, I did go to Williams-Sonoma yesterday, and I found a...
Outrageous.
I found a similar pepper mill to the one that Carrie and Aiden bought.
Outrageous.
It was $115.95.
That makes my entire body hurt. Like, that's so upsetting to me that it could possibly... Like, does it come with a lifetime supply of pepper?
I don't know. It might just be one of those things that in life are expensive to make when they're done well.
Maybe.
Like, that's the only thing I can think of, is they're just an expensive thing. Because you think about it, it is probably hand-carved. There's, like, that little mechanism inside that grinds... You know, like, sure. The little wheel and cog, you know, factory in there.
Like, I've had a bad pepper grinder before. Like, yeah. I know that bad ones exist. Oh, gosh. That, like, literally, you sent me that message when I was at work, so I could only kind of see the picture. Like, I can't really see anything on your watch.
Right.
But because I'd looked at it on my watch, it didn't notify me later that I had a message from you. So it was, like, hours later that I happened to be like, oh, I never looked at this thing that Elise... And when I looked at it, like, my heart stopped.
You were so mad. Well, you also have to pay for the little mouse that's inside that grinds it when you turn
sure it. exactly and that costs money.
But other than that, I don't really have any new news.
Well, let's jump into it, because we have a good amount to cover. Mm-hmm. We're here today to talk about The Last Supper Part One
appetizer. We both said appetizer.
You owe me a Coke. Coke Zero, please. This originally debuted August 17th, 2023. It is written and directed by Michael Patrick King. And we open on Coney Island.
Yay. Yeah. Carrie and Aiden are walking the boardwalk at Coney Island. She's saying that she's never been to Coney Island in the 35 years she's been in New York City. And I hadn't been to Coney Island until 2 years ago for Mike's birthday.
You know, Coney Island is that place where early on living in New York, I visited, and it was not nice. It was kind of gross. And I will say that they've improved it over the years. It's still kind of a strange place to be. Like, right. I had a really good time on my birthday, but it is I'm not sure what the right word is, but it's a little run down. They've done a lot to improve it. I really love it. I actually went just sort of randomly a few months ago just to sort of walk the boardwalk. And it was off season, so nothing was open. I know that they're actually working to open certain parts of it during the winter season this year. I think it'd be fun to go there and see what it's like. But I think it's really lovely. And it's funny how it's an easy place to not visit, but it's such an easy place to visit. And it's, you know, I think about, like, I love the ocean so much. And I always think, like, that would be the nice thing about living, say, in LA or something like that. But, like, the ocean's right there. You know, mm-hmm. You just take a train. And it's like an hour train ride. But, yeah, Coney Island is an interesting place that I actually wish that I visited more often.
Yeah, I remember being so pleasantly surprised. I just guess I had no idea what to expect. And it's really cool. It's like you're taking the subway and you're in a little, like, I don't know, touristy-like area. It was fun. There's a boardwalk. I remember being pleasantly surprised with like the prices of things when it came to the food.
It's not very expensive. Yeah, it's pretty affordable.
I didn't go on a lot of the rides because I was scared. Mike went on all of them, so I stayed off them with our friend Jesse, who at the time was concussed and couldn't really go on any rides, and our friend Annabelle, who also didn't want to go on too many. But we did go on, this is funny, we went on the Ferris wheel. So me, Mike, Jesse, and Annabelle went on the Ferris wheel, and Mike was like, do you want to go on a moving car or a stable car? Or a still car. And I was like, well, we could do a moving car. I didn't know what that meant on a Ferris wheel. You guys, it is insane. I was so scared. And then when I get scared, sometimes I sing show tunes. So I think Annabelle and I were singing the intro to Ragtime because we were both really scared.
You and Annabelle were like, why is it moving? Why is it moving? I'm like, it's a moving car. It's supposed to move.
I'll post video footage from this on our Instagram.
It was pretty good. It was really fun.
With the consent of Annabelle and Jesse. I don't think they'll care, but it would be very funny to post that video because I'm just like face down. I'm really scared.
Yeah, it was very fun. I do like Coney Island. So we kind of get, well, first of all, we get Aiden like doing the math on Carrie's age, which I'm like, rude, Aiden.
Yeah. Are you old?
Yeah. And then this sort of restaurant is all part of Paul's daughter. Like you can see it when it's pulled out that they kind of make it look like it's several different things, but it actually is all one.
Yeah, that's what.
One establishment.
That's kind of what I was confused about because they approach a large stand, Paul's daughter. And we'll get into this, but they kind of make it seem as if Steve is like redoing this place or buying this place. To be clear, Paul's daughter is still open and has been open for 6 decades. So I don't think Steve is kicking them out. But
I don't think so either.
Aiden says it took them three trains to get there. Not really true. They probably could have just taken the N train the whole way.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I was going to look at, I guess I didn't know exactly where they were coming from.
I mean, even if they came from, like, the Gramercy Park area or wherever that is, like, either way, I don't think, unless they were coming from maybe where you are, you wouldn't have to take three trains.
I take one train. There's a train that goes from my front door right there.
Like, the east and the west side both have a train that gets there. So settle down, Aiden.
And then this storyline of Steve opening a restaurant on Coney Island actually comes from David Eigenberg. That like he spent a good amount of his childhood going to restaurant, like going to Coney Island and getting like clams. And so this was actually a suggestion of his. One thing that we've actually talked about earlier in the season is that one of the big complaints of season one is that in general, the fandom of Sex and the City felt that Steve had kind of been, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of neutered, that he'd kind of had his agency taken away from him. And so they wanted to find ways to give it back to him. And this was one thing that David Eigenberg brought up was like, well, what if he's doing something new, doing something for himself, and it involved Coney Island. So this was a touch actually from the actor.
Yeah, and I like that Steve is the one person, I think, the only one out of the cast who is a native New Yorker.
Yeah, as far as we know.
I think Steve is the only native New Yorker, so it's interesting to hear him be like, yeah, I grew up coming down to this place. And he makes a comment, Aiden makes a comment that he couldn't afford an Uber because his money is wrapped up in this joint. But then Steve makes a comment back, but you didn't do too bad with Scout. And then they do like this weird like chicken dance and laugh with each other. So now we're assuming Scout has made a lot of money.
A runaway success, even though no one knows what borough it's in.
Yeah, no one knows what borough it is in. And I haven't really heard much of just like a singular dive bar making millions. But that would make sense as to why, you know, Steve and Miranda were pretty well off. But then Wyatt calls again.
Yeah, he wants Aiden to come home now because mom's being a dick.
A real dick, not a fake one. Yeah, and then Carrie and Steve are talking while Aiden's talking to Wyatt. And this is when Steve said he used to come to Coney Island a lot as a kid. And he came down a lot more when the shit with Miranda was happening. And then he saw the place and he was like, I gotta do something for me.
Hot dogs and clams.
Hot dogs and clams. Steve is hot dogs and clams. And I was still confused there. If he's buying the place, are you buying Paul's daughter? Or are they just using... I think they're just using this as a background and I need to settle
down. I believe
down.
So. I think so as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they cheers to something new. And then Brady pops up on a bike and that's it.
He literally is there for like half a second and that's his paycheck.
He's real excited.
So delighted. The look of delight on his face is like nothing. I've never experienced such happiness in my life, I don't think.
Well, then you need to go to a Che Diaz comedy concert because those people are also having
a good
time.
Laugh your ass off.
Yeah.
And we get Miranda at work and asking Serena about arranging a meeting and what Reyna would do, but Reyna is there.
Yeah. Reyna is like, I would do this and this and I already did it. But then we find out Reyna has been working at home because Reyna was supposed to be on maternity leave, but her boss baby Wallace approved her working while she was gone.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a slightly awkward conversation about her being back and that she only took 5 weeks of maternity leave and kind of like, get that judgment out of your voice. And it's like, I wasn't.
Yeah,
like,
no one
I'm
was
kidding,
judging
but
you.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, like, and then Miranda was like, I took 12 and it was awful.
It felt like 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
It's just an interesting thing. And I understand, like, your work is super, super important. But I've also, like, I guess it was just news to me because I'm not a mother. But I've heard from all of my friends that are mothers that have had children were like, it just wasn't enough time. And so it was just like, it was just an interesting thing to hear.
And bottom line, like, take what if you only want 5 weeks, only take 5 weeks.
Of course.
If you want 12, you should be allowed to take 12. Like, we should allow women to make these decisions for themselves. It's just then a weird conversation to have and sort of be like, I only took 5. Don't you judge me. I'm just kidding. I judge myself, but don't you look at me like that. I don't know. It's just so weird. Like, what's happening?
Like, are we supposed to not judge you? Do you want us to judge you? What are we talking right. about here? And on that note too, I feel like if you are a partnered person having a baby, I feel like the partner should also get time off because babies are hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we do in this country have like the worst policy.
Right. Some companies do very well. I remember my brother worked for a company for a long time that when he had kids, he was able to take paternity leave, I believe it's called.
I think so.
So then we cut to the gallery where Charlotte and Sam Smith and Jeffrey C. Williams, who is
credited as friend.
Yeah, credited as friend, who actually is Sam Smith's friend and fashion designer, who I believe was on Project Runway. They're looking at art. They're looking at an Alex Israel, who is a real artist. I was trying to see if Alex Israel had any, like, if this could have been shot at a real gallery, just because those look like real paintings.
Yeah, those are definitely, I was a little curious about that, and I don't have any inside information.
Well,
because those are definitely his pieces, but I think he's based out of LA.
Well, he is, and I was seeing, and it looks like he had work at both the New Gallery, which they have filmed at before, and at the Gagosian, but they were not within the past few years.
Yeah, so I would be curious. I wish that they had given more information about this in the other podcasts, because I'd be curious, because obviously just like moving these pieces alone is its own, you know, task.
Right. So maybe either there was a pop-up or someone just had pieces that they were showing. Who knows? But those are some Alex Israel pieces. And then Bonnie Milligan comes down and lets Charlotte know Rock is on the landline. Another landline reference.
Yes. It's an emergency.
Yeah. And then fangirls over Sam. Bonnie Milligan, I'm just using her real name.
I was going to say Layla or Bonnie Milligan, sure.
Well, I feel like, you know, let's give her some credit. Let her be known to the people who may not be as familiar with her.
She made a lot of this up. There wasn't a button to this scene. There wasn't an ending to this scene. So they just sort of let the camera roll. And Bonnie Milligan really did just sort of like make up like the curtsy.
Yeah.
And that really is Sam Smith being like, oh, she's so cute. Like that. None of this was in the script.
Yeah, I loved it because she goes over there and fangirls over Sam and she curtsies. And I wrote, we should all curtsy more often. And we realize that Rock has left their earth science notebook at home, which apparently isn't an emergency to Harry or Charlotte.
Well, and this is why I tell you to pack your bag the night before. And I have to say, and I don't mean to be like kids today, I don't believe there was ever a moment in my life as a child where I needed my mom to like leave and like grab my thing to bring it to school. So I don't know. I'm kind of like, Rock, get your shites together.
I think if that happened, I think I lived in a world where my mom probably would have done it for me. But also, I think that, yeah, get yourself together. Like, ask more nicely, please. Also, Harry is worried that his father died because he thought maybe that's why Charlotte was calling. And then I was worried, did Harry's father actually die? Because Harry doesn't have good luck with remembering his dead parents are dead.
Absolutely.
And now there's some arguing over who brings it. And now that Charlotte has her job again, it could be the argument over who is the most important. But Charlotte wins and Harry's bringing the notebook. So this theme is kind of introduced of the working woman and the working husband.
Well, because he sort of trips himself up. He does that thing of like, yes, but I'm the, and you know, you're the, and it's kind of like, yeah, where's that sentence going, sir?
This is the deal we made, Harry. You said you would pitch in. I have run to that school a million times.
Yeah, but I'm the...
You're the what? You're the man? You're the father, and I'm the mother?
Babe, I gotta go. Rock needs that workbook. It's an emergency.
Yeah, but Harry's a good guy, so he doesn't...
Yeah, it works out fine.
Yeah.
And now we're at lunch with the four ladies, the fourth being Lisa.
We are at Seeds and Weeds, which is a vegan restaurant in the Tin Building again.
Which also maybe doesn't exist anymore, because I couldn't find Seeds and Weeds. I have it as ABCV. So I don't know if they've had a rebranding... Because if you go to this location...
Okay, yes, I see what you see. I see what you see. So maybe Seeds and Weeds has had a rebranding. 10 months ago, it looks like it was Seeds and Weeds.
Maybe someone was like, hey, that's a terrible name.
And maybe they just thought that ABCV, which is an offset of ABC Kitchen. Yeah, but it was definitely a thing. And so that might... Oh, as of August 30th... Okay, I'm reading an article here on Eater. ABCV, the acclaimed vegetarian restaurant by Jean Georges, replaced Seeds and Weeds in August 30th of 2020. Gotcha. So
okay.
Very new.
That makes sense. Very new. It's funny how often I've been... I didn't realize what this facility was. I have walked around this so many times, I can't even tell you, because I love the South Street Seaport area, and I love to go and walk around there. And I've walked around the actual... that facility, but I've never been inside of this, and I need to go and explore it. I had no idea what it was there.
You've never been inside the Tin Building?
Never been inside. And there's like a cute little Mexican place, too. Can you imagine? I haven't been to a Mexican restaurant.
So I went there for my birthday. We were like walking around the Seaport, and we saw it, and we just walked in, and we went and we got a pastry at one of the bakeries, and it was beautiful. And it's so beautiful in there. It's like the Jean Georges version of Italy. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the place where Carrie and Seema and Aiden and Ravi have their dinners at a restaurant also in there. But it's just so beautiful, so aesthetic. They are at there, and they love the zucchini chips, loving the zucchini chips. Lisa's doc is getting extended to a 10-part series. But then Lily calls.
Yeah, and Charlotte shuts it down pretty quickly.
Yeah, because she is having lunch with the ladies. And then Carrie wonders, are we ladies who lunch?
We're ladies who brunch.
Which I think is worse.
100%.
But they do make a comment that it's only brunch because they're eating on a weekend. So.
Correct. And I do like that Charlotte doesn't want to talk about it and then talks about it.
Yeah, Charlotte isn't going to talk about it, but she does. And basically says ever since she's gone back to work, the fam has texted her nonstop. But... now she has more news and just wants a zucchini chip.
They don't have zucchini chips anymore, which makes me sad because I would like to try a zucchini chip.
Okay, zucchini chips are very good, but we can find you those, Mike.
Yeah, Carrie won a raffle, and this is just to sort of set up what's going to happen later on, really in the next episode, that she's won a private dinner at home for 16 people prepared by a Michelin star New York chef.
So here's something interesting about this. And she won it at the school that LTW and Charlotte's kids go to. So I understand that they go to a very pricey school. These people probably have huge homes. But I'm even thinking of someone like you, Mike, who has like a proper dining room and living room in a larger apartment. You couldn't fit 16 people in there.
No, we tried with the 9 for Thanksgiving last year was a challenge. We made it work.
Yeah.
But like, I was like, ooh, yeah, I have a dining room and I can't really fit this many people in my apartment.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking like, they must really assume everyone has a lot of space. And Carrie decides, you know, it's suggested that she should do it as a housewarming party, but she decides she's going to do it as a goodbye party. And then LTW says, what about a Last Supper?
Which is, I guess, clever, but also does sort of write itself.
But in that moment, we now realize what all of the marketing and advertising for this series was. Because the second season was very Last Supper looking. The imagery
that is
and
true.
Everything. Yeah.
You know, that's really funny. I honestly hadn't even thought about that.
Really?
Yeah. Kudos you.
Wow. I'm smart. No, the whole thing with them all at the table and Carrie in the middle, it's just like the pictures. I think it's Da Vinci's who does the Last Supper.
That sounds right. I'll give it to to the, I'll give it to you.
Not that Da Vinci was at the Last Supper. I'm just saying, like,
yeah. He was like, that's the whole joke of like, all right, everyone who wants to be in the painting, get behind the table.
Right.
And I do need to point out that she can't have it at her new place because she's just had the walls plastered. And this is just also brings up my whole thing of like, if you live in a house that is too nice to invite people over, I just think maybe you've gone too far.
Well, maybe... I don't know what wall plastering does.
I don't either.
Okay. So, but maybe that's just something that, like, you can't mess up till it's done.
Sure. Okay. We'll give it that. And Carrie, they sort of, we now have the group, I like this, that we have the group sort of separate.
Right.
And we're going to have Carrie and Miranda going their own separate way together. And Miranda bringing up the fact that she's going to the UN on Wednesday, and Carrie's never been to the UN.
Not even on a class trip. And I'm wondering how close Miranda and Carrie lived to New York City when they were growing up. That just popped up in my brain.
I feel like we know this on Carrie, and I should be able to say it. But
I want to say it's Ohio.
Off the top of my head, no. I never watched the Carrie Diaries. It's probably in there. And it's sort of that thing of where, you know, they came on a trip in the eighth grade, but Carrie skipped to buy some pink jelly fisherman sandals at Fiorucci, which I then had to look up. And Fiorucci was a store that opened in 1976 near Bloomingdale's on 59th. It closed in 1986. It was a big deal for the 10 years that it was open. They tried to reopen it on Lower Broadway in June 2001, but I don't think it lasted long. I couldn't really find anything about that location.
So two things. Carrie was from Castleberry, Connecticut, which isn't a real place.
I thought it was Connecticut.
Yeah, it's not a real place, but Candace Bushnell is from Glastonbury, Connecticut. So that would make sense that she could have gone there on a field trip. And Fiorucci, yeah, so whenever you... I actually have a friend who used to tell me about when he would... He grew up on Long Island and he used to come into the city and like going into Fiorucci's was like such a big deal. He might have even worked there for a hot minute. And then whenever you watch things like about any of the, you know, the Warhol people, like that whole era... you'll hear so many, or like the pre-Club Kid, Club Kids, or even the early stuff about the Club Kids. They talk so much about Fiorucci, which was kind of like the store before Pat Fields.
Gotcha.
So it was like the cool store, the not new age, but you know what I'm talking about, like the bright colors. It's like where the downtown scene went before like Pat Fields and Club Kids and all that. That's like where you wanted to shop.
I know that Madonna's brother worked there.
Yeah, like all of that. It just makes sense. It's a big thing and Carrie would have totally shopped there. Yeah, and then Carrie tells Miranda she saw Steve's new place and she will be continuing her tour of the outer boroughs next week when she sees Che's comedy concert in Brooklyn. And Miranda reminds her Coney Island is in Brooklyn too, so it's more of like a tour of her exes.
And Carrie just sort of points out, okay, but they're my friends too. And I think it's really easy to get to lose the fact that Che only knows Miranda through Carrie.
Right. But Carrie only knows Steve through Miranda. So I don't know. I understand what you're saying. I totally get it. I think especially when people get divorced after really long times, like I think of my friends who are married or coupled that are together and, you know, like I'm close with both of them in a lot of cases.
And I think that it's also, you know, there's the Aiden connection that Aiden mm-hmm. and Steve became
right.
friends. So it made sense that she was visiting Steve with right. Aiden, but it makes sense in general that she would go and see Che perform because they were friends first. And I understand Miranda's point, you know, and Miranda even is like, you know, it's just weird that Steve has a new place and you've seen it and I haven't. And the point is made of like, well, you can go, like you have a Metro card.
No. She taps now, which for those of you who are
I do as well.
I do too. Those of you that are not from New York, like before you would... Well, before you would use a subway token and then you would use a Metro card, which you would swipe. And now all subway stations, you're able to like use your phone like Apple Pay or your credit card and just tap, which is very helpful. And something that no one will notice, but I noticed just because I've been to the Tin Building, is where they're walking into is like the gelato shop and you can't exit through there. And they're like turning a right.
I was wondering about that. I hadn't been there, but I looked at it online and I was like, what? I can't figure out where they're going.
Right. Like to the left of it is a little gelato place. And I only know that because Mark got gelato there. And then to the right, I think, is just like candy and stuff. So maybe they were just going to go look at candy.
They're looking at the lollies.
Yeah. And then LTW and Charlotte are upstairs in the Tin Building, which is more of a like mercantile type shop.
And I love glassware. And I feel like Charlotte is even more excited about the glassware than I would be.
Yeah. I don't know if they have antique glassware there. I think, I don't know if any of it's actually antique, like Charlotte's making it sound.
And, you know, maybe don't tell anyone about the PBS thing, but Charlotte is going to tell everyone about it.
Yeah, it is happening.
Yeah, and Lisa is afraid it's not going to happen. And Charlotte tries to be encouraging, but now we have Lisa telling her other news.
Yeah, LTW let Charlotte know she is pregnant.
And Charlotte thinks she can do it. And Lisa knows it's going to be a lot. And we have sort of like the how did this happen that she thought that she'd moved out of Babyville.
But apparently she lives right on the border. And then we realize why she's so upset. Damn, I thought it was my time.
Right. And Charlotte saying, do you want to sit down? And no, she wants to go home and take a nap.
Yeah. Then we're back at the pet store with the lizard.
And someone's going to fill up the bins. I think that Che says, I'll fill the bin. But I don't know. I didn't know what this line meant.
Yeah, I don't know what's in the bins either. I was kind of looking at it. I don't know if it's like, sometimes I know animal shelters or places like, but they're not a shelter. They take donations of towels and blankets and things.
Gotcha.
Because it looks like that Che is pulling out fabrics and stuff, but I'm not really sure. And then I was also looking around because you notice, if you notice the doors in this vet office, there's a door that says Elphaba. And then I kind of looked outside and it did look like Hell's Kitchen. And that would make sense that there is a vet office with doors that say Elphaba and Hell's Kitchen. But Judy is there asking how dressy Che's venue is for the comedy concert. Che tells Judy, you don't have to come.
I do feel like we have to give Judy credit for calling it a comedy show.
Right, but I'm never going to hear that.
Judy is the first character that seems to understand what it's actually called. And like, you don't have to come to Brooklyn, but you know, she came all the way to the Tropicana in Atlantic City. And this doctor that comes out and is like, Judy, I need your help for an hour or so. It's just such a weird way of saying that. Like, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, I just have Dr. Fisher comes out of an office labeled Elphaba. Then Dr. Fisher misgenders Che.
Yeah, and I don't know, Che's thing of like, how would he feel if I called him young? Probably he'd be fine with that.
Yeah, but I do understand, and I think it's a good conversation to have, and I think they're doing what they are striving to do, which is just kind of bring up conversations and get people to think about things maybe they haven't thought about before.
And then we get to Anthony and Giuseppe in bed and the sort of like, you're a wonderful lover and I know, but it's nice to hear.
And now my turn to F you, yes.
And we get into, and you know, this is an interesting top-bottom discussion, and I don't know, I guess it is that thing that is very singular to a gay male relationship, like, though certainly in other relationships there might be preferences or things that you have to kind of negotiate. I guess this is a very specific gay male thing of like, well, I don't know, is one the top and one the bottom and it's always that way? And I do think it's funny, Anthony's assertion of like, you know, men my age, we have certain ways of looking at things. Because I remember being in my early 20s and being told by people not much older than me that like, oh, your generation is so strange that you have top and bottom, whereas back in my day, it was just whatever. And so I wonder if there isn't a very specific age group that decided that one is one or the other.
Yeah.
And I am in that age group.
Well, and so is Anthony. And I think...
Exactly.
And I think part of me was thinking the same thing, or if it was more about roles in the relationship and less about like sexual preference and more about like... Who's going to be the masculine?
Well, and I think that's what it comes to, because Anthony bringing like, you're the woman. And I'm right. Like, wait, okay, now we're in a very strange territory.
But I do feel like that was something for a long time that was a thing where, you know, a lot of masculine people, and I think this is all around the queer spectrum in general. It doesn't just go to like cis male relationships. I think for a long time there was a lot of, you know, mask femme type people. And it is, I remember going to a bar when I was living in Michigan, a gay bar, and these were a common thing at the time before like texting was very simple, where they had little cards where you would like write your name and check off if you were like top, bottom, verse, or and put your phone number so you could hand it to someone.
Sure. Yeah. And then I don't know, the line of like, why would you be afraid of more love? I would be like, I think he's more afraid of your giant wang in his butt.
Yeah, that's kind of what he talks about. And then I was just really mad here that there was no, like, you're the top, I'm the bottom joke from Anything Goes. I thought that that could have been, like, a really good place for that. And then Giuseppe says, I'm bottom, I'm top, I'm in love with you. That could be a Hallmark card.
And now we have more sex, and it took me a minute. I'm like, who is this beast with two backs? And it's Ravi and Seema, and it's very quick. It's just her saying that she loves him, and then him quickly returning the line.
Yeah, that's it.
And then Carrie asking Lizette if she should leave anything, and there's a couple of ratty bras from the 80s in the closet.
Yeah, Carrie and Lizette and Kat are in Carrie's place. She's unpacking, and it seems as though Lizette is getting the place, but she can't have Carrie's rotary phone because there are calls in there she has to take with her. Should we tell Carrie that calls don't live in the phone?
And I also just think, like, the idea of, like, anything you want, just tell me. And she's like, well, I like this, but you can't have it.
Yeah. Anything you want except everything I want. And then Seema comes in and calls Lizette the luckiest girl in New York. So now we see, okay, Lizette bought the apartment from Carrie for a good price.
Because she wanted it to go to a single woman or a single lady.
Well, because Lizette's apartment is getting taken back by the gay guys.
The gays. And they get free jewelry for life.
For life. And then Seema thinks there's a disaster because she already told Robbie she loves him. It's too soon. It's been 3.5 weeks, which brings me to a crazy Sex in the City timeline thing.
Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking about everything, and I have friends who have bought apartments in New York City. So in 3.5 weeks, Carrie has bought a new apartment, sold her current apartment, packed a lot of stuff, finalized these deals. There's just a lot that's happening.
What we haven't discovered is that Charlotte has been married 5 times. Just kidding.
Oh, okay. I'm like, no, if it was 3.5. Yeah. Oh, yeah. In 3.5 weeks, Charlotte could be at least married. Yeah. 3 to 4 times at this point.
And, you know, Carrie's point of if you feel love, run after it.
Well, Seema doesn't know what's wrong with her. She was feeling a lot, but he was inside her when he said it. And Carrie can't hear that because she's eating edamame.
Yeah. And then we end on the kitty that she thinks is hers now.
Well, before that, though, Seema thinks it clouds judgment, love, because look what it did to Carrie. The price she sold the apartment for is insanity. I'm just curious as to what it was. And Kitty is in a shoebox, which you have to keep Kitty now.
Oh my gosh, that cat. I can't deal with it.
Can we talk about how Sarah Jessica Parker actually did keep that cat?
Yes. And its name is actually Lotus?
Lotus, yes.
Yeah. And now we're at the UN and we talk about Lisa and we meet Joy.
Played by Dolly Wells.
Yeah, she was in the Bridget Jones Diary film, and then I think she was in Bridget Jones, the third Bridget Jones. She was also in a TV series. Oh, I meant to look this up more. It's called Doll and M, and it was her and Emily Mortimer who was in The Newsroom. And I believe it was sort of them playing versions of themselves. Anyways, it was one of those series that I meant to watch and then never did. I should give it a go. It's only like 12 episodes altogether. And then we have sort of like Miranda can do anything. She's brilliant. And we get into, you know, except for painting your bathroom. I don't know. I feel like we're setting this up to be a romance.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, okay.
Because I wrote, Raina has to run to breast pump, but says to Joy that if she needs anything, ask Miranda. Miranda's like, not anything, you perv. That was the vibe that I got from it. And then something I noticed here is that Joy looks so much taller than Miranda in this scene, but Dolly Wells is only 5'10 and Cynthia Nixon is 5'7. So maybe it was the camera angle, the shoes, who knows?
Yeah, they put her in some quick, because she looks like she's 6'8".
Right. I was like, wow, okay. And Joy thinks Miranda is Raina's associate. She's impressed with Miranda. And then Miranda comes home to Naya, who is very excited about Carrie's dinner and would cut her arm off and eat it if it was prepared by a Michelin chef. And they both smile and laugh. Cannibals.
Yeah, don't do that. That's not a good idea.
Yeah. Weird.
And then Miranda wants Naya to be the buffer with Che. And we really quickly get to an email from Andre inviting Naya.
I paused really quickly because I was doing that thing I do. And she has emails from Grubhub, the MoMA, Columbia, and New York Times. And then also, I thought I was really doing detective work here because I was reading the blurb in the mailbox from Andre Rashad. But then if you just open the email, which she does, you can read it all very clearly. And it says, Hi, Nye. I saw your comment on my Instagram post. So grateful that you're happy for us. Here's an invite to the shower. Hope you can make it.
And this was based upon a writer's experience where one of the writers who is unable to have children was left by her then partner who wanted to have children and sent this very similar thing happened where she liked some post that he did, and then he invited her, and then she did this very thing, which is then buy a very expensive gift, basically to be like, maybe you're having a child, but I have lots of money.
Yeah, Heidi's wearing a hat in the photo. Naya realizes she may have over-emojied the Instagram post and clicks on the registry. Mike here, just so everyone's clear, if Mike's ever invited to a baby shower, he will be buying the nose, Frida.
Because it's so gross.
It's so gross.
Disgusting.
I understand the purpose. I understand what it does. I don't know why Mike just buys, like, immediately. He's like, yep.
I get on there because I don't want someone else to buy it. Like, I need to be the one to buy that.
Yeah. And in this moment, I realize Miranda still has her MH tattoo. Not that she wouldn't, but it's there. Yeah, and Naya does make a comment first that she's going to do what Miranda does and cut off her next ex.
And I think that Miranda's surprise to this comment is interesting because I feel like this is an established fact about Miranda. It's as though she has to remember again that she is someone who, when she breaks up with someone, is you don't exist anymore.
Yeah, and she does do that.
And then we get to Che watching their old stand-up. We have the Netflix special that we saw them record. And then we get to the Tropicana, and I, at the Comedy Stop, and it's sort of this thing about, like, the doing the host and not eating. And listen, here's, I don't know, I don't mean this in a rude way. It's not like a great set, but I only know that it's a disturbing set to watch because the music gets real sad.
Right. And I think also, I mean, I think, yes, the music is sad. I think it's also because it's from 2012 when they are calling Che Cheryl, and it looks as Cheryl identifies as a lady, because Cheryl does say, like, we as ladies. And I think it's just, maybe it's more less about the set or the experience and more about just how Che was feeling at that point in their life.
Yeah, sure. We get to Lisa tossing and turning, and why didn't you get a vasectomy when I asked you to? I actually wrote the sentence, I don't know how to talk about this conversation because I know that they're playing it for comedy. I know that we're trying to, like, make this funny. This is honestly a really serious conversation to me.
Well, and it does get there because I don't necessarily, I think at first they're kind of playing it as like he's like kind of trying to say the right thing, but he's not saying the right thing. And he's basically saying he didn't get the vasectomy because at the time he thought maybe it was just the hormones talking because she was going through a lot. But he says he'll be there to help, but he's in the middle of a campaign. What happens when you win? And I'm like, okay, Lisa, real wishful thinking there. And then he does say we should talk about the other thing.
Which I'm glad. I'm glad that they bring that up, that that we are going to have a bit of a conversation of, because it's even acknowledged, like, we do live in a day and age where not everyone has every option.
Right. And she says there, or he says, I want you to do what's best for you. And you can tell at this moment she is grateful that he said that, and she's grateful she has that option, but she can't. And then I just wrote, that ring is so big.
That ring is so big. And I can't imagine, like, being comfortable wearing it to bed and, like, the fluffy feathers. I'm just like, yeah, she's sleeping in a very big ring with lots of feathers. And and it's also an odd headboard, which is neither here nor there. And yeah, I guess the end of it is just her saying, like, I just need to wrap my head around the new reality. And I think that it's just sort of her needing to make peace with it. And we're at Carrie's and Anthony shows up. And at first, I'm very confused. And we have some plastic surgery talk.
Well, Carrie is in heels and pajamas.
Yeah, I did notice that as well.
Yeah, Anthony talks about being a gay dinosaur. It's not his face, his ass. She has made Cosmos for them. It's giving me big Carrie and Stanford vibes, which I think it's supposed to.
And we're drinking, and he doesn't need a reason. And we'll get to the fact that there's a message from Stanford, and he's in Kyoto, and we have a more gay than Sha, which I don't get that joke, but sure.
Where's Baldo now? He's in Japan with the geishas, and he's staying.
He had a big, ugly fight with his TikTok client. She fired him and ran off to Berlin. He wandered around Kyoto for days crying, eventually found his way into a temple where I guess he stopped crying and he wrote, Harry, for the first time in my life, I felt peace, real peace.
What's a monk do?
Well, they keep up the public altar, put out fresh flowers, facilitate the tourist temple visits.
So basically, God's concierge.
basically, yes.
And this storyline actually comes from Michael Patrick King being in Japan for the release of the second Sex and the City film. And, you know, it was not well received. That second film did not get very good notices. And that he and Sarah Jessica Parker were in Kyoto and I think visited... Obviously, he didn't become a monk, but he was in a very dark place and visited a church in Kyoto. And that's sort of where this came from, that he sort of was trying to find a sense of peace amidst feeling very low about where his career was and how he was feeling. So that's sort of where this comes from. And they sort of talked about how they hadn't known what to do over Willie Garson's death. Like, they didn't want for Stanford to die. They wanted Stanford to be alive somewhere in the world and to be happy and at peace. And I know some people that thought that this storyline was silly, and I get it, but I think it's also kind of lovely. I think it's also kind of like, if we're going to find a way to have him exist in the world and be at peace, I think this is kind of a lovely way to do it.
Yeah, and I like the things they say. I like how Stanford's letter is answering everything Anthony says before. Yeah. Like, Anthony's like, well, why couldn't he tell me himself? I'd tell Anthony myself, but I know he'd just make fun of it.
Yeah, which he just did.
Right. And then we find out he left Anthony everything. I let go of things that no longer serve me, and I let it go with love. And then Anthony kind of realizes that he can't let go of things currently in his life that no longer serve him. And then they both cheers to Stanny. And there's a little wink in there that Carrie does. And I'm assuming that's for Willie Garson.
So it's not, that wasn't scripted. And her drinking the drink in one gulp wasn't scripted either. That she just sort of did that. That Sarah Jessica Parker made the choice in the moment of like, I'm going to get this done. Like, I'm going to get past this by downing this entire drink. And she sort of put the wink in there. And Michael Patrick King talked about sort of like getting chills, like watching her doing that and like being sort of in awe over that choice. And I do also want to make a quick note that originally in the script, it was Carrie saying, I got a letter and I'm going to kind of paraphrase it for you. And the choice was made after the first draft of like, no, she should be reading from the letter. Like, mm-hmm. We don't want her kind of telling us what the letter was. We want her reading Stanford's words, which I do think is a much more powerful choice.
Well, and also, I mean, imagine if you were Anthony in real life, finding out that your ex-husband sent a letter and the person being like, I'm not going to tell you exactly what it says. I'm just going to paraphrase it for you.
Yeah, 100%. And Charlotte's about to leave the gallery, but the girls let her know that when someone sells a piece over $100,000, they take them out for drinks.
So she's going to go out for one.
Well, and I like that the point is made that Layla's like, Charlotte, be the main character. Mm-hmm. And I really like that because I think that, you know, there's a healthy balance of us recognizing that we are not the only person in the world, that we are not the main character in the universe. But you have to remind yourself sometimes that you are the main character in your life and you should act like it.
Yeah, main character energy, as the kids say.
Do the kids say that? I like it. And now we're at the Brooklyn Comedy Club. This really is Old Man Hustle, Brooklyn Comedy Club, 308 Bedford Avenue.
Carrie is very overdressed for it.
Well, she's also showing her wee purse.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Literally, this is the line where she's like, it's so wee.
Oh, also, I forgot to mention that Sam Smith is carrying a martini bag in the beginning. I liked it. So, yeah, her and Aiden are outside. Carrie is letting Aiden know that she left a chair open at the Last Supper for him, but Country Lurch is never setting foot in that apartment.
Yeah, because Aiden doesn't want to sit up front because he got called Country Lurch at a comedy club in Norfolk.
And he's not setting foot in that apartment.
It's fine. It's a continuation of a storyline that annoys me, but it's fine. I'm trying to let it go.
Well, we'll get more closure in a minute.
Yeah, we will. Miranda shows up and, you know, decided that she doesn't want to treat Che like Skipper.
Yep. She doesn't want to throw X's away anymore. I can't treat Che like I treat Skipper. That was 25 years ago, yes, but it still bothers me. Bothers me too, Miranda.
I wrote in my notes, it was 25 years ago, and it still bothers her and Elise.
Yeah. Well, it's just rude, you know? Justice for Skipper. Justice for Skipper. Justice
and, you know, for Skipper. Miranda brings up that Che doesn't know that Miranda's there. And I do, we have a moment. We see Carrie's face. We see Carrie register like, okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is a good idea.
Well, and also in my brain, I'm like, oh, there's going to be something. And I didn't think it was what happens. I thought there was going to be another person there, maybe like a date person. But then we cut to girls doing shots with Charlotte at Chapel Bar on 275 Park Avenue South. Charlotte is getting lots of family texts, and she is drunk.
And she throws her phone into a pitcher of margaritas, and away it goes. And I thought to myself, also, you could just turn it off.
Yeah, also, that's a blender. That's weird. Yeah. Now they have to figure out what to do because you just threw your phone in their blender.
Just turn it off.
Yeah, there's easier ways.
I don't want to, like, this just, I hate this. This scene at the comedy club, I wrote, we have a horrible shock. Just ugh. Like, who don't? Ugh, their whole thing of like, here we have this cisgendered couple over here. I'm like, gross. Like, you're being gross. I hated it. I hated this opening part of this scene.
You didn't like it. I don't think you like crowd work with comedy shows.
I don't. Yeah. I don't. Leave me alone. I'm just here to watch your show. I don't need to be part of it. Like, but I also just feel like it's like marginalizing for comedy's sake. You wouldn't want someone to do that to you.
Right. But I think when you go to a comedy concert and you sit front row, you understand that that's going to happen, which is why I think Aiden didn't want to sit front row.
I hate it. And we have Che at the bar and Toby is there, but it's pretty quick because Che is called up fairly quickly.
Yeah. So then Che is in the lobby working on their set. Toby shows up. Che starts their set talking about Miranda. Miranda is not having a good time.
Right away. We're like, oh. I'm like, this is where we're going with this. Yeah. Okay.
It's a very aggressive set. This scene is weird. Okay. Then Chase says they were confused too. So I think it gets better. And I think Miranda does too. Like, you can see Miranda being like, okay, the resolve's going to be better. Ouch. She was confused about everything. And I was confused about why I was effing her. And you can see Carrie, like, Aiden's just looking straight ahead. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't want to get involved.
Aiden's, like,
I don't know
at one point
do.
Just looking into his drink. He's like, how can I be not here?
And Carrie's just looking over like a concerned friend, which is very good. And Miranda gets up to go.
Yeah, I wrote that I feel like Miranda would have had to make the choice of, I'm going to not be offended by this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to understand that Che is a stand-up and that this is part of their job. And I'm not saying that I could have made that choice. I'm not saying that it would have been the easy choice to make. But very quickly, Miranda is like, nope, I'm not doing this. I got to get out of here. And
yeah, and I think personally, I'm not saying I would be able to do this because this probably was heartbreaking for Miranda. But I think the stronger choice and what would have really dug a knife in Che's beehole is if Miranda stayed the whole time and then just went up to them after and said,
your girl was lovely, Hubble.
Yes, and then kissed them on the cheek and walked out. Yes, that would have been great. But, you know, I just have a question. Would you, because I did not have the same experience you did with the opening comic. Do you like going to comedy concerts in general? I know you like comedians, but I don't think I would recommend you go to a comedy concert, or if you do, go to like sit in the very back.
Yeah, no, I used to have friends that did stand up. And I want to say that I have huge admiration for people that get up and do stand up. It is in general a really painful thing. Like there's always going to be that one comic where you're like, what are you talking about? Like, so yeah, I'm not great in the situation in general.
Yeah. So I think it just is like an improv show for you where you just get wildly uncomfortable and you don't like people getting picked on because those people in the crowd looked like they were having a fine time.
Oh, I don't like it. And then we have like a heckler with his like mean time that I do like that Judy shuts him up.
Yeah, it was really, really weird. Yeah, so Che gets a little, as I wrote, dumbly. And then a random audience guy is like, meanwhile, who says that, number one? Like, what kind of heckle is that? Meanwhile, no. And then Miranda gets stopped by Che outside and Miranda just yells,
not funny! Not funny!
I didn't know you were here.
What difference does that make? What kind of a person gets up on stage and makes jokes like that about what happened between us?
A stand-up. That kind of person. Why are you so surprised? I'm a stand-up comic. That's what I do. I get on stage and I make jokes about the bad things that happened in my life.
I'm a bad thing that happened in your life?
God, it's all bad, Miranda. That's the fucking point of comedy.
I never thought of you as a bad thing that happened in my life. Until now. Now I do.
Burn.
But this is all, once again, and I'm not saying that I would have been better in this situation, but I feel like Che's point is really valid of like, I'm a stand-up. This is what I do. I get up on stage and I talk about my life. And you're a huge thing that happened in my life. And maybe they're not phrasing it perfectly, but I don't know. Yeah, it's a tough situation. I get it on both sides.
I would highly recommend if you are dating a stand-up comedian and you break up, the worst place to like reintegrate yourself into their life is surprising them at their at their newest idea. Set after the breakup, because you will be material. Like,
for sure.
I am notorious. I'm not a stand-up comedian, but I am notorious for when people like are mean to me or really rude, for just looking at them and being like, thank you for the material, because that's how you have to look at life, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I honestly do believe that the jokes about what a mess Che is were coming next. I really do believe Che when they say that.
Well, that's how a routine works, is you build it up and you usually, a good comic will bring it back and, you know, tie in a little bit of heart or tie in a message with also like a touch of self-deprecation. And a bad day, maybe some defecation.
if that's your kind of show.
Yeah.
And Miranda leaves and Toby is there. And I get Che's thing of like, I'm so tired of explaining who I am.
Right. And Toby is cosplaying as Eponine in this moment. And Toby is like, there's nothing hotter than a strong NB person.
Which I didn't know this term. I had to look it up.
Really? I do know this term. Yeah, so NB, non-binary, which was then elongated actually to like a word, right. ENBY.
And it's non-binary. And Che's going to go and Toby sort of asked to walk with them. And I do think it's funny that they feel like, oh, I left my notebooks. Ah, who cares?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think you should care. I think you should go get your notebooks.
Right, because who knows what else is in there.
Right.
And then I wrote, Miranda comes home wasted. Nope, that would be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Charlotte comes home wasted, and the kids and Harry wonder where she's been. She has been slaying at work.
This is a broad comic performance,
yes.
And I'm into it, but I was like, ooh, we are going for it. And, you know, Lily calls Charlotte gross, and I'm like, you can go fuck yourself, Lily. Like,
I know, but I think Lily is like, ew, mom, what are you doing? It is weird to see your mother acting out of control as a kid, as a teen. I think when they don't usually do it, you're like, ew, I don't want to see this.
And I get that. And I always have that because, like, you know, my parents didn't drink at all. So whenever I'm at work and, like, mormies. And whenever I'm at work and, like, parents are getting kind of, like, sloshed in front of their kids, I'm like, oh, that's so weird. But I guess that's, I just because it's such a foreign world to me. But I guess for me, like, I think about my friend Vanya, who has two very young kids, and I understand that, like, kids we never see our parents as human. Mm-hmm. Like, we never see our parents as fully human beings. So they're always our parents. But, like, Vanya makes the point when her kids are being mean to her, where she's like, you know what? People like me. People want to hang out with me. Like, I'm cool. So I get in this moment of Charlotte being like, I was a person before you. I'm not just right. your mom. I'm not just your moms. I like that she says that.
And also I don't think you're, like, shaming parents who do drink in front of their children. It's just something
not that at all. It's just an odd experience for me.
Right. I wonder, like, I don't know. This is a completely different conversation for a different day, but I would love to hear you, like, your experiences on many things, like getting older and being like, not everyone has Mormon parents. I'm sure that's, like, a very interesting thing in general. Even sometimes you hear songs, you're like, that wasn't just a Mormon song.
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, that wasn't a Mormon song? That's wild.
The normies listen to the mormies.
I thought that primary colors were a thing from primary school in church. I didn't know that it was way later in life that I was like, oh, everyone's heard of primary colors? That's very interesting.
The Mormons do not own Roy G. Biv. Yeah, so I agree with you, though. Like, I think it is such a thing, and especially as you get even older and you realize your parents don't know everything. Like, that's a whole wild thing too. I just think at this moment, Lily is embarrassed and she doesn't know how to say that. So she's just like, ew, you're gross.
And Charlotte slams the door.
And Richard Burton, who's king, is like, what's happening?
Richard Burton is the only one that's on her side now.
Yeah. And she's like, you're cool. Hi, baby. And then Carrie and Aiden are in a hotel. And Carrie tells Aiden to say goodbye to this place because they'll have their bedroom ready in her place. In our place very soon.
And this moment came from John Corbett, that John Corbett's first day on set, he sort of called Michael Patrick King over and was like, you know, I think that I made some mistakes. Mm. And then he was clearer about it. He was like, and by I mean Aiden. It's like, I'm thinking about Aiden, and I think that Aiden has some of the blame as well. Mm-hmm. And John Corbett is the one who brought this up, that Aiden's need to, like, lock Carrie down Because I wrote, he made mistakes too, and I wrote, like, not going back to her apartment. And yeah, we get to that, that when he couldn't get her to sign a marriage license, he made her sign a lease. Mm-hmm. And that he never wanted to go back in because he was afraid he would get mad at her all over again.
Right. It's that manipulation thing that never works in relationships. It's like, if I can make myself so important to you that you can't live a life without me, you know, if I can't get you this way, I'll get you that way. And yes, he was doing it out of love because he loved her.
For sure.
But unless both sides are 100% in, it's never going to be, it's just never going to work.
And then Kathy's calling, mm-hmm. and I wrote, you know it's going to be Wyatt.
Yep, Wyatt is in the ER. He broke his collarbone. He drove Aiden's truck into a tree. Aiden has to get on a flight.
Yeah, that's kind of all we get now, that right. Carrie's like, well, let's get you on a plane. And we have a really quick scene at Lisa and Herbert's where she's bleeding and he says they should go to the hospital. And she basically says, I think it's too late. And we know this is going to have ramifications for
Correct.
Sure.
And then Carrie is in the new apartment, gets a call from Miranda. Miranda doesn't feel comfortable coming to the Last Supper. Miranda says, you don't know what Chase said outside. And then Carrie says, I don't care about what Chase said. What about Steve?
I like that Carrie gets tough here. I like that Carrie's like, I don't care.
Oh, see, I thought in this moment, Carrie should have at least said, okay, what did Chase say? Because she kind of just doesn't even let Miranda have any moment and just goes into like, what about Steve? And we are all team Steve, but it just didn't make sense to me.
Oh, I liked it. Yeah.
But then Miranda says she's coming. And Carrie is making the bed, and Aiden calls.
And we find out that Wyatt also broke his leg in two places. And this is such a tough scene, because on one hand, well established, I am not a parent. And I will buy into this. I will, like, John Corbett gives a great performance. I did have the thought of, like, well, he got you to come home. Like, this is what he wanted. Like, Wyatt played this pretty well. He probably didn't intend to injure himself quite so badly, but he definitely got what he wanted, which was his dad back. And it's really hard for me because I believe the grief is real. I believe that this guilt must be true of like, I should have been here. But I also have the thought of like, you're not always going to be there. Like, things are going to happen.
Well, I think this is one of those two things can be true at once. I think that these things do happen and you can feel that way. And you can also understand that like you didn't do anything terrible in that moment and that kids do act out when they don't feel like they're getting attention from their parents, that divorce is hard on kids, that separation is hard on kids, that I remember being 14 years old and all of those emotions and doing really bad things to try to get attention. You know, there's a lot of, you know, well, if I do this, my parents will notice me. If I show them how I'm hurting, they'll notice me. And I've done that. You know, I did that even older than 14. And, you know, and parents do feel guilt around that. And I don't blame, looking back at it now, I'm not like, yeah, it was their fault I did these things. I think for me, it was more, I was just really sad and I didn't know how to ask for help and I didn't know how to say I'm hurting.
And just like that, for the first time, I was worried. So two interesting credit things. Leroy McCain, who plays Andre, is the very first like guest star credit. He's not actually in the episode. They just use his picture. So I'm curious about how that contract was. Hmm. And then also, it's really weird on IMDb, if you're on the show page, Alex Lugo is credited as Toby, but if you're on their page, they're credited as Jess. So IMDb needs to get on that. There's some fixes to be made there.
Right, because Jess is actually the name of the actual comedian who goes up before Che.
And I guess I couldn't help but wonder if we're going to have a conversation with Wyatt about what to do with your feelings.
I couldn't help but wonder if you are insanely wealthy. Do things just move that quick in the real estate world, in the everything world? Like, are you able to jump through all these hoops and buy an apartment like that?
Probably, but yeah, I wonder as well. All right, so we have one more episode of this season.
And then we explode.
And then we expire. All right, so we'll be back next week with the finale.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. And don't forget to check out my new podcast with Vanya Arslanian, Mike and Vanya Can't Not. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, let's all take care of each other. Up next, The Last Supper Part 2, Entree. I visited really, really early in my, when I lived in, okay. God, I meant to write down people's names. Like, I'm forgetting every, there are too many cast members now. There are so many cast members that I'm like, wait, who's who? Who plays Steve? David Eichenberg? That's right, right? Mm-hmm. Too many people.
And it's kind of magical. Not as his new apartment, but his new clam shack. Ew. And
Steve's clam shack.
And I like the part where he goes, I have written here, Anthony is telling him his ween is too big for his beehole. Tell it to my sphincter. And then I thought, was that a follow-up to tell it to my heart? Tell it to my sphincter. Tell me I'm the only one.
A bop just waiting to be written.
Just being torn right open, if you will.
And now we have more sex, and it took me a minute. I'm like, who is this? Who is this beast with two backs? And it's Ravi and Seema.